In the backwoods and swamps of Arkansas, there is a legend of something terrifying.
Y'all going camping?
I guess you could say that. We're looking for the Boggy Creek creature.
But when you search for a legend,
I don't want to see it.
You may not like what you find.
Welcome back to the show. It's 13 o'clock, Tom and Jenny.
And it's episode 42.
Collection of cryptids. We have not done a cryptid show yet. Jenny she didn't really want to do a cryptid show, but...
Well, I didn't until I started researching it.
Yeah.
Because I think when we first started talking about doing a cryptid show, I was like, man, I don't want to do a whole show about Bigfoot. Yawn.
Well, there's more than that out there.
But yeah, then we decided, well, let's just do one about all the cryptids, and that'll be like way more fun, because there's way more fun ones out there than Bigfoot, I think.
And, you know, let's go ahead and get this out of the way. Many of these cryptids are implausible, but there are a few that are plausible.
Yeah.
I don't know if you put the plausible ones on this list, did you?
Well, I kind of put plausible ones and batshit crazy ones.
Okay.
Just because, you know
the
what I mean?
The entertainment factor.
Yeah, because I thought, you know, so I just put ones that I thought were interesting because I said I can't talk about like every cryptid ever reported because this show will be like nine hours long.
This show is at least rooted in reason, and some of these things that are
relatively
just not possible. But, you know, it's going to be a good show.
Yeah, it'll be fun. And, you know, I did a lot of research and picked out some of the more plausible cryptids and then some of the crazier ones, too, some of the ones I thought were cool.
Okay.
So that's what we're going to talk about. And I kind of have them all in categories and all that.
All right, housekeeping. Do plugs.
All right. So the first thing, so the first thing we got to say, as we always do, a big thank you to the Project Entertainment Network, on which our audio podcast is hosted. You guys are just doing fantastic. Our last month, we had 4 times more downloads than we had the previous month.
Yeah, quadrupled.
May was quadrupled. Our numbers were quadrupled.
We're now the number 2.
Slot. Yeah, we're now their second biggest show. So woohoo! Thanks, you guys. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and also for the people that are listening to the podcast, please subscribe to our YouTube channel so we know.
Even if you don't listen to it on there,
right? Just subscribe to it so we can get credit for it, and we know how many of you guys there are. And it's also a way that if you ever want to make a request or you ever need to contact us, it's very easy to leave a comment on YouTube.
Yeah. And we always read those. We probably read those more than we read the messages on the blogs and everything like that. So we'll see that one probably sooner.
Right.
Also, I want to thank everybody that has bought my book, The Unseen Hand. It's selling really good, especially the audio book version.
Yeah. The audio book. It's weird. Audio book just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought maybe it would really dominate in ebook. Audio.
No, audio, yeah.
Audio, selling
which
like
is good, man. I'm
everybody
so glad
loves
that.
It.
Yeah.
And you got a new review from Australia.
Yeah.
5-star review on that. They loved it. And I think you've got a review on that in England now.
I really do appreciate all the people that listen that contacted us from England and Australia afterwards.
Yeah. Free stuff.
That contacted us. Yeah, so
free stuff.
Same thing. I mean, if you guys, I still have some codes left. I have codes for Unseen Hand. I have codes for Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, all my 4 paranormal books. I still have codes for all of those. So
just audio only. We don't,
yeah, that's audio only.
They won't let us, we would love to give out free samples of ebook and print book. But the companies don't allow us to do it.
Yeah, pretty much ACX, that's the parent company of Audible, they're the only ones that kind of let me do that.
Right.
Every time I publish a book, they send me, you know, X amount of codes that I can give to people, to kind of get interest going and get people to write reviews and things like that. Because, you know, it's good for them, it's good for me, so... So that's generally what they're for. And I usually try to give them out to get people to write reviews. So if you want to write a review of it... any one of the 4 paranormal books, I still have codes. I don't have a lot left for Unseen Hand, but I have some for the other ones. So if you want those, then let me know. Contact me somehow on YouTube or Facebook or wherever, you know, or Twitter, whatever.
Yeah, and Australia and the UK have priority on those.
Yeah, but
we,
other people do, it's fine.
That's true. It's just that we have lots of reviews on the US
that's
Audible.
True.
We need to fill in the holes. Australia is very lacking. If there's anybody from Australia, we'll verify through Facebook, you know, where you're coming from, so we know you actually live in Australia. But any book you want, any audio book you want, we'll send you a code for it.
Yeah. And let's see.
Same with England.
Yeah, that's right. So, and also, if you like my paranormal stuff, my paranormal nonfiction, I did an interview on the Real Paranormal Activity podcast with Aaron Hunter. And that was posted about a week ago, I think. So if you go to the Real Paranormal Activity podcast, just, you know, do a Google search on it and find it. I think I was either episode 123 or 124. I can't remember now. But yeah, it'll have my name on there. So if you want to go listen to me talk about my new book and about poltergeists in general, then you can do that. Also, Spooky Empire. I think we mentioned that before. It's coming up in October. It's actually the weekend before Halloween, October 27th, 28th, and 29th. And we are going to be there live in person.
Yeah, with booze.
Nude. Not really.
No.
Yeah, with booze, though. We're going to be on most of the panels. We're going to be, like, most of the literary panels.
Yeah.
And I think we're hosting the Sick and Twisted panel, which is the best one.
Yeah, it's
Friday night, yeah.
That's when we hand out free booze.
Yeah. And that's the one where everybody talks about, like, the most fucked up shit they can think of and stuff like that. So, yeah. That's usually their most popular one every year. So, we're going to be at that one. And we're going to be, you know, and we'll be around, like, during the weekend, too, like, selling books. We'll be out at the table and we'll be doing meet and greet and whatnot.
Okay, I also want to do another shout out. I stumbled into something. I like to be the hip connection. So if I run into something cool, I'm going to tell everybody else.
Even if it's like, if it doesn't necessarily have to be new or anything like that. This is just stuff we happen to randomly come across.
And we wanted to, I don't know about you guys. I'm a Star Trek fan. I'm not a big fan of like the newer Star Trek with J.J. Abrams. I really didn't even really like Next Generation too much, but I love the original series with Kirk and Spock. Well, they got some guys that are making old school Star Trek with Kirk and Spock, and it's a dead ringer, and it's guys making it. They're fan films, but you wouldn't know it really by looking at it. They're real pro. And it's called Star Trek Continues, and you can watch it free on YouTube. It's got Grant Imahara on it.
From Mythbusters.
From Mythbusters.
He plays Sulu.
Lou Ferrigno shows up
as an alien.
As an Orion slave master. It's a really cool. And they also had, the chick from Erin Gray, from Buck Rogers,
showed up
on it.
Yep, she was.
But
on one.
The guy who makes this stuff, he plays Kirk in this little miniseries, and he's just got it, man. It's a dead ringer. It's awesome. Go check it out.
It's like, yeah, and it's like, I'm kind of the same. I didn't really care about like any of the newer like Next Generation or Voyager or any of that. But the original series, that's my jam. It's like, I love Spock. He's the best. Mm. You know, I'm not like a super, super fan, but, you know, I'm pretty into the original series. And this thing, like, he just discovered it, and he's like, yeah, I'm like, Jenny, you got to see this. And then, like, we just sat there all day and, like, watched every single episode up on YouTube.
They have 8 episodes. There's 3 more coming.
And there's 3 more that'll be out this year.
And they're not going to make any more of them.
Yeah.
Because there's some licensing stuff going on. Not with them, but just with making fan films.
With making fan films and stuff. You're not really, you can make them. You're just not allowed to make profit off them. Which these people don't. They actually have a nonprofit, and that's what they make it out of. And actually, he fronted his own money to make the first ones, and then he did a Kickstarter. He
put $150,000 of his own money in it. But anyway, I think one of the strongest things is when you look at it, it looks like Star Trek. It looks like
really
the original 60s Star Trek.
Yeah. The lighting, the framing of the shots, it's like everything looks exactly the same.
The special effects are a little bit better, but the sets are exactly like it, and so are the costumes. And the writing, surprisingly, the writing is really, really good. Each episode is very,
very, very Trekkian.
I really liked, I think it was the 4th episode. And I don't know if you guys ever remember the mirror episode where there was the evil Spock with the beard.
Yeah, like the most famous one.
Yeah, and then Kirk left him behind and goes back to his own dimension. I always wondered what that bearded Spock did, what he did back to start the revolution. And they actually have an episode for that.
Yeah.
I think it's episode 4. And man, just, if you're only going to watch one of them, watch that one. What was the name of that one? Do you remember?
Oh, man. Now I can't remember.
Something like in the
Fairest
mirror.
Of them all.
Fairest of them all.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Called the Fairest of them all.
If you're only going to watch one of them, watch
it's
that
like
one.
A continuation of Mirror Mirror.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So actually, we're almost at the 10-minute mark. So let's get on with the cryptids.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I did, basically, so we're going to talk about cryptids. And we're kind of talking about, you know, ones that are plausible, ones that people have seen, ones that maybe are a little bit less plausible, that are maybe just kind of legend or whatever. I kind of felt like we should start with the kind of bigger ticket ones, and then, like, after the commercial break, we can do kind of the weirder, more batshit ones. So that's, like,
Bigfoot, Sasquatch type stuff, right?
Right, right, right. Okay. Yeah, so the first thing we wanted to talk about, we wanted to start with, you know, your Bigfoots. Because that's probably, I think that's probably one of the most commonly reported, at least in this country, I'm not sure about other places, but it's kind of one of the most commonly reported types of cryptids, big ape men.
They're pretty universal, kind of like dragons.
Yeah, they're like big ape men. Usually, yeah, pretty much every continent has one.
Every culture had one.
And usually described as like either like a big gorilla type looking guy or like a Neanderthal. Usually between 6 or 10 feet tall. They're usually bigger than a person. They usually have reddish or brown or black fur. They usually smell bad. Not always, but usually. And there's different ones, like some of them tend to be aggressive and attack people, some of them not so much, like some of them are more shy and stuff like that. Obviously the most popular one, Bigfoot / Sasquatch, kind of spotted all over, but I think mostly concentrated on the Pacific Northwest is where he's...
Bonneville Snowman would also be in there.
But the thing about Bigfoot and Sasquatch is that pretty much every region of the United States has their own version.
Right.
Right? Like here in Florida we have... the skunk ape.
Yeah.
Or the stink ape. He's also called the stink ape. For obvious reasons. I know. Because that's what I call him. I call him the skunk. Oh, I call him skunk ape.
If you understood the Florida panhandle, you know where these stories are coming from. just look at Florida panhandle mud trucking. You'll see.
So we have skunk ape. Also, if you guys, and if you're like me and are a Mystery Science Theater fan and have seen Boggy Creek 2 and The Legend Continues, which is actually one of my favorite episodes, there's also the Boggy Creek Monster. That is an actual Bigfoot-type creature that's reported in Arkansas. Also called the Fook Monster or Fauk Monster. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. It looks like Fuck Monster, but that's not that's something totally different.
Yeah.
Or the Southern Sasquatch, he's also called that. Now, Louisiana has one called the Honey Island Swamp Monster, which is gray, and he has webbed feet, so I don't know why. I guess it's Louisiana.
Yeah.
And there's, like, swampy. But it's swampy here, too, and I don't think skunk ape has
webbed feet. Yeah, but the swamps in New Orleans are nothing compared to the swamps here.
That's true.
Well, unless you went down to the Everglades.
Yeah. And then Ohio has one called the Grassman. Arizona has one called the Magallan Monster, Magallan something.
I don't know, so you're just kind of naming them all off.
Yeah,
all
these are just, the U.S. ones.
All right.
There's one called Momo the Monster that's in Missouri. He has like a big pumpkin head. In Ontario, they have one called Old Yellowtop, who's like Bigfoot, except he has like a blonde streak in his hair.
Yeah.
So he's like the hip Bigfoot with the frosted hair.
Yeah.
And these have been reported like all over the world too. Obviously, the most obvious one in Nepal is the Yeti, which is kind of like Bigfoot, but he's kind of usually depicted with white fur. Not always.
Teddy Roosevelt even claimed to have seen a Bigfoot. Well, in a way.
A lot of people have said they've seen a Bigfoot.
He told a story that he was around a campfire and there was some kind of a big moving object out there that threw a stone at him, threw a stone at their campfire, and I think he threw the stone back and it gave out a wild howl and took off. And I think he was alluding to it was a Bigfoot.
That it was a Bigfoot?
Yeah.
Now see, of all the cryptids, like, I'm not sure I really buy any of them existing. Like, other than the ones that are just like, you know, big bats or whatever. You know, that could exist, obviously. But of all the kind of real hardcore cryptids, I think Bigfoot is the most likely one to exist, or Bigfoot type creatures. Not that I'm saying they do.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that it would surprise me the least.
Here's the problem with Bigfoot and Bigfoot type creatures, especially in North America. Most of North America, of the United States, has roads running through it.
Yeah.
If you look at Google Earth, pretty much no matter where I drop you on the United States, if you walk in one direction any longer than about an hour or so, you hit a road.
Yeah.
So that means there's going to be Bigfoots crossing roads. I just don't think that there's a habitat for them in most of the continental United States. If a Bigfoot does exist in the continental United States, it's going to be up somewhere around like Washington State.
Yeah.
Or in the big national forests. I mean, some of those national forests, man, is still not set foot yet.
Yeah, somewhere where no one goes or no one's been for a very long time.
Right. I if it exists, it's going to be there. It's not going to be something like Florida skunk ape. It could not remain hidden in Florida.
Well, because like you said, and this is kind of a problem that arises with a lot of cryptids, not just Bigfoots, is that there has to be a lot of them. Like, for people to see them all, there has to be a breeding population.
There has to be a breeding population, which means that there's a lot of them.
Which means there has to be a lot of them.
Which means there's going to be an environmental impact. Yeah. All right? Now, here's an example. We live in Sanford, Florida, which is a relatively civilized place. This is higher income housing. Jenny and I have looked out our back window and saw black bear climbing the fences.
Yeah.
I was working on my motorcycle and felt like someone was watching me, looked out my garage door, and there was a bear looking around the corner at me going, "Hey, you got any food?"
Yeah.
You know, and they run away. They're like a dog.
Yeah, they run through our neighborhood all the time. Yeah.
So Bigfoot would have been the same way.
And we live probably like less than a mile, like a mile from the highway.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Like from I-4.
And a few years back, a neighbor, you know, the down here by this, what's the name of that road? Anyway, where the barn was.
Yeah.
Okay. The doctor that owned that farm trapped a bobcat.
Yeah.
There's bobcat all through here. You never see them.
Yeah.
That's a nighttime creature, but they're here.
Yeah.
And there's an environmental impact. They all leave trails behind and footprints behind. If there were Bigfoot, there'd be a breeding population. You'd see them and they'd be leaving footprints everywhere.
Yeah.
And some of the newer paranormal cliques that you'll find online are claiming that Bigfoot is a spiritual creature, almost like a ghost, like a Native American ghost. But they're spinning it in that direction to explain why there is a lack of footprints and why there is a lack of physical evidence.
Although some people have claimed to have seen footprints or have those plaster casts, but they're very easy to fake. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
Like, I could make a plaster cast of a Bigfoot that all you have to do is cut one out of a piece of cardboard.
Not saying there's no Bigfoot. I'm not saying there's no Bigfoot around here.
No.
If there was a Bigfoot in the continental United States, it would be up near Washington State, Sierra Nevada Mountains maybe, up near Canada, in the Canada area. I think that's the only place where that could, where something like that
could avoid detection. Yeah, it would have to be way out in the wilderness.
And then with the advent of FLIR and all these weird satellite technology, you might be able to actually pick up a Yeti, something that big, body heat from space at night. You know?
Yeah, you'd think.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah.
Maybe they're not looking for it.
Yeah.
One of the ones in this category that I think is plausible, because there were some pretty good witnesses to it. Witnesses that were educated, was the O-ring pendek.
Yeah.
The O-ring pendek might exist.
Yeah, that was actually, that's been seen in Sumatra.
Yeah.
And the thing about the O-ring pendek is kind of like Bigfoot in the sense that it's like an ape-like creature, but it's not big. It's usually described as between 2 and 5 feet tall.
Right.
Which is just the size of like a normal ape or a normal monkey, right, pretty much. It could be like an orangutan or something of that
what
nature.
What they're describing is like a very bipedal chimp-size orangutan.
Yeah.
Kind of what...
That wouldn't shock me if there was some kind of other primate out there that they hadn't discovered that was that size.
That's all a Bigfoot or an O-ring pendek is going to be, though. It's nothing supernatural. It's nothing
paranormal. Well, yeah, it would just be an unknown primate.
Yeah, it's all...
Is probably what it would be.
And, you know, the gorilla was an unknown primate for a long time. Right. People didn't believe that existed.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people point that out when they're talking about Bigfoot and stuff like that. But, you know, there were other kind of smaller ones. Like, there was one called the Batutut, or the rock ape, which was seen in Vietnam, Laos, and Borneo. And that was actually probably seen by the U.S. soldiers during the Vietnam War. But, you know, there's other ones, too. Like, some of the most interesting ones, I thought, these have been reported in Alaska. And the funny thing about these is that it's not just one creature. This is, like, two populations of creatures. And they're almost, like, competing, right? Because there's one that are like kind of regular, Bigfoot type creatures called the Yurayuli. And they're 10 feet tall and they have a cry that sounds like a loon. And they have like luminescent eyes and really long arms and stuff like that. But they're really peaceful. They're shy. They keep to themselves and stuff like that. And they were reported in southwestern Alaska, rather. Now in southeastern Alaska, there's another creature that's said to be like their rivals or something like that. They're called the Kushtaka. Now, these are kind of like Bigfoot creatures, but they're more like man-sized, like were otters. They're like Bigfoots, but they have like otter heads.
Okay.
Which, I don't know, whatever.
Kind of like the medieval dog head.
Yeah, kind of. And they're supposed to like eat children and stuff like that.
Right.
But honestly, of all the Bigfoot type creatures, now I really don't think this one exists, but of all the Bigfoot type creatures, the coolest one that I discovered, and maybe, I don't know if you've heard of this because you grew up in Brazil, but... Have you ever heard of the Mapinguari?
No.
The Mapinguari. He's also called the Iznashi. And he's kind of like a Bigfoot, except, and he's reported like around the rainforests of like Brazil and Bolivia and stuff like that. Now, he supposedly is like a Bigfoot, but he only has one eye.
Yeah.
Now, he has really long claws, like a sloth, like a ground sloth. And he kind of has lizardy skin, and he has backwards feet, which is something that a lot, that's something that a lot of people report about, like Yetis and things like that they have backwards feet. So it's like you can't tell where they're going.
You can't track them.
So you can't track them. That's why. More than one have that. And also, he has a second belly in his tummy.
So there's two stomachs in his stomach.
No, he has like a mouth in his stomach.
Oh, okay. I thought you
with like, but yeah.
Okay. I thought you said he had another belly in his belly.
Bellyception.
Yeah, belly.
No, he has another mouth in his belly. Yeah. Maybe I did say that.
That almost sounds like a Japanese monster.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, that's very weird.
What they call a yokai.
Yeah, it sounds like a yokai.
Sounds like a yokai.
Okay, so, I mean, other than Bigfoot-type creatures, there's a ton of those. There's some other kind of, like, hominid-type creatures that I kind of wanted to get into a little bit. And one of these that was really cool, just because I like the name of it, is a Pukwudgie.
Pukwudgie. Yeah.
And this comes from the Wampanoag
Pukwudgie.
Indians.
Pukwudgie. Sounds like something that you do to freshmen when you're in high school.
No, give him a Pukwudgie.
Okay,
these are from like Massachusetts Native Americans. Now, this is supposed to be a little hominid. He's only 2 to 3 feet, and he's kind of gray, and he has like a big nose and big fingers and big ears, but they have magical powers.
Okay.
They can
a leprechaun.
They can conjure fire. They can appear and disappear, control the souls of people they've killed. I don't know how they kill people. I don't know how they kill people. I guess they set them on fire, which, you know, that's bad.
It's a Native American leprechaun.
It's a Native American leprechaun, pretty much. Just because, and this kind of reminded me of it too, just because I guess because he was gray and little. But in 1973, there was a creature spotted in Illinois, and he's called the Enfield Monster, no relation to the Enfield Poltergeist, which we also did a show on. It's a completely different thing. But the person that saw this reported it as a 4.5 foot tall creature that was gray skinned. He had 3 legs, 2 little short arms, and 2 big, huge pink eyes like flashlights. Okay. And I'm like, what the fuck was that? And he said it hissed like a wildcat, right? And that it could jump really high and like jump really far. Now, the first guy that saw it said he thought it was an alien. But skeptics later that looked into it thought, well, it might be some kind of monkey or a kangaroo that escaped from a zoo or something like that. So nobody knows what that was, but that was kind of another humanoid one from Illinois. And now, like, right around the same, like, kind of Midwest, Michigan, Ohio kind of area, and maybe some of you guys have heard of this. I think I saw it on Mysteries at the Museum, the Melonheads. Have you ever heard of the Melonheads? Because you lived in Michigan for a while, too.
Yeah.
The Melonheads are supposedly these, obviously, people with big, huge, bulbous heads.
Yeah.
And apparently there's a whole bunch of them, and they live out around this mansion called Felt Mansion in Michigan. The legends are different about them in every state, but usually it has to do with them being children with hydrocephalus who had been experimented on by some evil doctor or something like that. And then they either escaped or they were let go and they went feral. And then they started living out in the woods and breeding and things like that. And now they either eat babies or they eat people that go into the woods around there.
That's weird. I had an ex-girlfriend in Boston a long time ago. Her name was Stephanie. And she was from a place called, not Massachusetts, but what's over there near? Trying to think of the other state that's up near there. Anyway, she told me something about these applehead children. And it kind of
it might be the same thing because
they were inbred children from a little housing complex. And the housing complex got shut down. Or no, first they put a fence around it first by the government. And then it got shut down. And then there were these people, inbred children living out in the woods trying to capture kids.
I think that's the same.
And she believed it. She thought it was real.
There's a version of it from Connecticut too.
Okay. Wasn't Connecticut.
But that's kind of the 3 states there. It's Michigan, Ohio, Connecticut have the main
state that they're called Melonheads. Maybe I'll remember.
But yeah, there's all kinds of variations of that, but they all usually have something.
New Hampshire. She was from New Hampshire.
Okay, so it might be the same.
Yeah,
it's probably the same.
Applehead children or apple children or something like that. It had something to do with there was an apple orchard nearby. and they would pick apples and sell, make apple pies and sell them to the town that was next to it. And she told me this story as if it were real. If any listeners know what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah. That, like I said, that might be another variation of the Melonhead legend. Because I've heard of the Melonheads. I haven't heard of Appleheads, but it sounds like the same story.
She believed it to be true. But you telling me that story, that I remembered that.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. I was like, oh, man, I heard a story that was similar
to that. Man, I'm going to have to look up Appleheads.
Yeah. Applehead children, I think is what she said. Or yeah. Applehead something. Maybe someone from New Hampshire would know what it was. I went to New Hampshire once. It was strange.
I've never been. I've been to other places, but...
I felt like I stuck out there.
Why?
They looked like people off the money, you know?
They looked like people off the money.
Yeah, it's like I went back in time and everything was black and white. It was weird. Okay.
If any of our New Hampshire listeners know what the hell he's talking about, please tell me. I'm a Florida native. I have no idea. Yeah,
New Hampshire was like a parallel universe. I was only there for a day or two, so maybe, you know. Maybe I just happened to go to a weird place. Yeah, I went into a Walmart and everybody was staring at us.
Maybe they thought they looked
Amish or something. There was something about them. They looked very like Amish or Pennsylvania Dutch or something. Something was weird about them.
Oh my God, that's hysterical.
Yeah, I felt like I was from another planet.
You are.
Like, oh, look, there's an outsider. Okay, go ahead.
All right, because we went on so long about the Melonheads and about the Bigfoot creatures, yeah. I was going to start talking about like lake monsters before the break, but maybe we should wait until after the break and get into lake monsters and then...
Well, this show is probably going to run a little bit late anyway, huh? We have a whole bunch.
Maybe, yeah, we still have a bunch of stuff, but you know, if it does, you know, whatever, right. It doesn't matter. So we're getting up to the halfway point, so I'll just take a break right now. We can kind of go over the lake monsters and then get into the fun stuff.
Okay.
All right, so we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Bizong! It's Bizong, the Bizarre and Weird Fiction Podcast, hosted by me, Mr. Frank. Bizong is the showcase podcast of the bizarro fiction genre. And those who write weird and read weird are going to love this podcast, where each week we talk to everyone who is anyone in the bizarre and weird fiction realm. So join us here every Monday, presented exclusively by Project Entertainment Network.
Subculture Corsets and Clothing is our favorite store for unusual clothing, shoes, and accessories. They offer a wide selection of men's and women's clothing at great prices. Subculture also offers a cool selection of shoes and accessories. Steampunk, gothic apparel, retro, corsets, and so much more at Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Check out Subculture online at subculturecorsets.com. That's subculturecorsets.com. Make sure you use the discount code 13 o'clock for a 10% discount. Subculturecorsets.com or visit their store in Jacksonville, Florida, just off I-95.
How do people who make stuff up for a living make stuff up?
New York Times bestseller Jonathan Mayberry told us.
Oprah's book club favorite Sue Miller told us.
You know, you sort of take a character and make some bad things happen.
How'd we get them to do that?
We colored them, just like at a cocktail party, except through your headphones.
Join us every Thursday for the Liars Club Oddcast.
A slightly unhinged podcast where storytellers interview other storytellers.
Available on Project Entertainment Network, iTunes, and everywhere podcasts are heard.
The Unseen Hand, a new exploration of poltergeist phenomena by Jenny Ashford, author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to The Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser-known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Hand Book on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
Okay, and we're back. Lake monsters. Now, a while back, we did a show on sea monsters and ghost ships. And the Sea Monster Show, we kind of cover you krakens, you giant squid, your octopuses and stuff like that. So I just want, the lake monster thing, those are usually like Nessie.
Yeah.
They're usually like a long snake thing or like a plesiosaur type of thing.
Yeah.
And again, just like in Bigfoot, it seems like everybody's got one, right? Like every significant body of water has a lake monster in it.
We've got them here in the United States.
We have them here in the United States, usually between 10 and 80 feet long. Some of them are bigger than others. Obviously Loch Ness Monster is the most famous, but the U.S. has a bunch of them. And interestingly, most of the American ones are usually based off Native American legends. That's usually where they started from. Like the Native Americans said that there's a monster.
Or they claim that they started.
Yeah.
I don't think those stories are as old as the stories claim to be.
They might not be. Yeah, so U.S., we have, there's a monster living in Lake Champlain called Champ or Champy, unoriginally. Yeah. And that said, it's been sighted since the 1600s. There's one in Georgia living in the Altamaha River. There's one in the Bear Lake River between Utah and Idaho. That one actually has legs, 50 feet long, and he's usually described as cream-colored with a head like a cow. So not so much like the plesiosaur type model, is more like a kind of dragony looking thing. Lake Erie has Bessie. Chesapeake Bay has Chessie. Lake Tahoe has Tahoe Tessie.
No.
Because no one can think of anything other than Nessie, for Christ's sake.
If somebody hasn't noticed already, these are all American reboots of the original.
The original
is Nessie, the Loch Ness Monster.
Pretty much.
And when you really look at the Loch Ness case and the situation of the Loch Ness, all the other ones kind of fall apart, if you ask me. Lake monsters. If there are any lake monsters you want to go, look at this fishing program, River Monsters. Those are the lake monsters. What was his name?
Jeremy Wade. That's scary enough. Why do you need to invent one?
Yeah, there are some big fish.
Have you seen some of those catfish he's caught? Yeah. Or those arapaima or whatever?
Right.
Holy crap.
Yeah, there are huge freshwater fish in lakes that the average person wouldn't know where they are. Some of that stuff weighs, 500-600 pound fish.
Yeah, ridiculous.
That could swallow a man.
Yeah, well, some of them do.
Yeah, some of them do.
I mean, that's the whole premise of his show, is that he sees in the newspaper, hey, somebody was probably killed by a huge giant fish.
Right.
And he goes to check it out.
Right. So, yeah, I think they do see lake monsters every now and then, but it's not Nessie. It's these big fish.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I imagine, because, like you said, the ones he's caught on there are horrifying enough, and I can totally see how, if you were out at dusk or something like that, saw one of those coming out of the water,
Right, your imagination might run wild with you. But if you look at Loch Ness, that's a good story, but there's a lot of ecological problems. You got to go back to where there has to be a breeding population.
Yeah, because Nessie's supposed to be very large.
Yeah, and if there's a breeding population, that means that there are many of them. And if there are many of them, there has to be a food source. And Loch Ness doesn't really have any food.
Not really. It's very cold, isn't it?
It's cold. It's deep. There's not much vegetation on the bottom. There's not enough food in there to support a breeding population of large creatures like that. And if there were a breeding population of large creatures, as described, the young would be up in the shallows, splashing around for everyone to see. That, big creatures don't hide. They don't need to hide.
Yeah.
Elephants don't hide.
Yeah. You'd think. And I mean, actually, there's one like Nessie type creature supposedly in Canada. They have Ogopogo. They also have Igopogo that supposedly lives in Lake Simcoe in Ontario. And that one also has a dog-like head. But that one's actually been seen lying on the shore, which means that, it can breathe air. They think it's not just a lake monster. But that's actually a kind of a variation, because they said, they've seen that one laying on the beach rather than just in the water.
Yeah, we live in the South. You hear about something like Nessie, and then we look back into the history of the South. Nessie wouldn't really be all that scary to us. There used to be alligator gar here that are fantastically huge. Yeah. They had to make machines in the early 1900s to go out there and kill all the gar. They wiped a lot of them out.
Yeah.
Because they thought the gar were dangerous. The gar weren't dangerous, though, for the most part. They had a lot of teeth. They were long.
Yeah.
I think some of those things got to be about 10, 12 feet long.
Yeah.
There was a time in the 1950s where they would pull up snapping turtles. Some of them weighing, like 500-600 pound snapping turtle.
Yeah.
6 foot in diameter. Nobody's sure how old those turtle were. Maybe 150 years old. That's all gone now. But there used to be big monsters.
Yeah.
But you'd recognize them for what they were. They were turtles and big fish.
I think the biggest gar I ever saw here was probably only 5 or 6 feet.
I used to catch them with my dad. The biggest one I've ever caught, and this was back in the very early 80s, was about 5 feet long.
Yeah, that's probably about the biggest one I've seen.
And about a foot and a half long. About a foot and a half of that length was head.
Yeah.
They got a big, long snout like an alligator.
Yeah.
But they're not a very strong fish. They don't fight very hard on the end of a pole. And they don't taste good, so you just throw them back. The problem is that you can't get a hook out of their mouth. They swallow it every time. And to reach in there to get the hook, but you can't because of all those sharp teeth. So a lot of times you just have to cut the line, or you have to pry the jaws open to get the hook out, and it kills the fish. So every time you got one of those poor things on the end of your line, you had to kill it to get the hook out of it.
Yeah.
It was sad. So I don't think they have big ones like they used to anymore.
No, there's so much development now. Yeah. I don't really think we have big anything anymore.
Right.
You know, as far as like, and it's funny because the Loch Ness Monster is the most famous one, but it's funny because Scotland actually has another Loch Ness Monster called the Morag. That's kind of their second most famous creature. And supposedly that one was struck by a boat in 1969 and a guy shot at it. That was like two witnesses. And there's also one in Ireland called Mucky. And that legend only came about pretty recently because the lakes of Killarney, they were doing sonar readings in it. And they got this weird, like, big anomalous shape. And this was in 2003. And from that, this whole legend spoke. It was, maybe it's a lake monster. So they called it Mucky from the lakes of Killarney. Yeah. That's Ireland. You know, other than that, they're all pretty much kind of the same. And I think they all kind of come from the same well of... You know, like you said, there's big fish out there. There's lines of otters. There's things like that.
Guaranteed, the Loch Ness Monster story is an old story, and it really probably comes eventually. It probably comes from stuff that was handed down from the medieval period. Because the medieval technology in Europe, they didn't have the fishing technology they needed to really bring in big fish. And Jeremy Wade showed it on some of his programs, that in medieval times in Europe, some of those fish in those lakes got huge. They showed wood cuttings and people said, no, that can't be true. The fish can't be that big sitting next to a cow. But no, it could. He could go down there and catch them. It wasn't a catfish, was it? Big old grouper.
It might have been. Well, I have seen groupers that were almost as big as a cow.
Yeah, that thing weighed about 1,000 pounds. They easily swallow a man.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Wade said back in the medieval era, they didn't have the fishing tackle you needed.
Well, they wouldn't be able to catch a fish like that.
So fish used to get some of those fish got bigger and bigger and bigger. And they didn't really get their hands on fish that size until they started draining some of those small lakes.
Yeah.
And then they'd find those fish and eat them.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'd come up with the netting technology you needed, where a whole bunch of guys would go down there and cast a net into a certain part of the lake and pull on the net, you know, huge ropes, you know, and maybe you could pull out a fish that big. But you couldn't do it with rod and reel. They didn't really have rod and reel then, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So fish got bigger, because they
were
being...
It would never happen today in modern Europe.
They weren't being taken out of the gene pool.
If you look at modern Europe today on Google Earth, that's not the kind of place where fish would get that big.
No. Like I said, too much development. Yeah. But, you know, the other than the Nessie-type creatures, I think really the only kind of, you know, famous, lake monsters, you know, that are kind of well-known are the Kelpies. But they're more like... They're more like horse people, but they're like shapeshifters. That's like a Scottish Gaelic thing.
Yeah.
And that pretty much, it's kind of like Loch Ness, where it's like every big lake in Scotland also has a Kelpie story. But they're usually portrayed as like having a horse head or a person with hooves or something like that. So speaking of like werecreatures and werewolves and things like that, that's kind of like another very large category of cryptids. Your wolf-like creatures, your dog-like creatures,
those are Roman in origin. I think the oldest the oldest count of one was an old Roman story about a Roman soldier killed somebody while in dog form and escaped. I forgot how the story went, but based on memory, that was the first. Because I didn't know you were going to mention those, but based on memory, that was the first account of a werewolf was Roman.
Yeah,
and I think that kind of stuck with the medievals. And only reason why I think werewolf stories and shape-shifting stories continued for as long as they did is that they would occasionally find dead women and children, partially gnawed. Then they'd find human teeth marks on them. And in the thinking of those days, you know what I mean? They would say, oh, well, a human could have never done that. That was a vampire or a werewolf that killed that person. A demon that took human form. And it's because they didn't really know anything about serial killers.
Yeah.
You know? They had serial killers then, you know?
Yeah.
They actually captured one, I think it might have been France, who had killed a bunch of girls. He claimed to be a werewolf.
Yeah, that was a pretty famous case, yeah.
The church killed him eventually, I believe, didn't they?
I think so, yeah. I'd have to look it up, but I know the guy you're talking about.
And so werewolves and vampires, actually, I think you could trace, that's just serial killers. That's what they're talking about.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah. I mean,
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, the thing is,
that's usually how the human mind would work.
Yeah.
I think the medieval Christians couldn't grasp the idea of a serial killer.
Yeah, maybe not. Like I said,
think about it. If you did something evil in the medieval times, if you did something evil, they would say the devil did it, that a demon got into you.
Yeah.
So if a man is a serial killer, another interpretation, a medieval interpretation, was that he's possessed by a demon, he turns into an animal, and he kills these women.
Yeah.
So in their minds, that person actually physically transforms into that animal. You know? Yeah.
That's what I'm seeing. Yeah.
You know?
And like I said, you know, the ancient Egyptians had all that human animal hybrid thing going on too. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that's pretty much a human universal, like thinking humans can take.
And the medievals also believed in dog heads. The church believed that dog heads were real and that a dog head could convert to Christianity, and they'd never seen them.
Yeah.
And if you guys don't know what a dog head is, you can Google it.
Yeah.
The medievals had tapestries and drawings of dog heads. It's just a human with a dog head. They believe that they actually existed in towns somewhere over there. It was always somewhere over there. They never really could find it. But somewhere over there, dog heads lived.
Yeah, that's like your urban legend type thing. Yeah. And there were actually a couple more recent, you know, 10th century talking about werewolves. There were a couple recent cryptid sightings of those. And one of those was Wisconsin, the Beast of Bray Road.
Yeah.
That was spotted in 1936. Although some people thought that was more like a Bigfoot, but other witnesses said it was like a werewolf or like a man bear type of thing. And
a man bear pig,
yeah. And then there was one in 1887 that was in Michigan. That's the Michigan Dogman, and that was kind of like that was described pretty much like a werewolf. Yeah. He had like yellow or amber eyes. And, you know, he howled. He had the torso of a man and, like, the head of a wolf or whatever. And he supposedly comes on a 10-year cycle. Comes to do what? I don't know. Rip people apart, presumably. And then there are some other ones that are just, like, not necessarily werewolves, but just, like, big wolves or bears or bear-wolf hybrids or, like, ones that are bigger than normal. You know, like the Wahila, that's from Canada, Michigan, Alaska era. And there's one called the Shunkawarakan. Kind of like a Native American type thing. And, you know, while we're talking about kind of dogs and things like that, you know, we got to bring up the Chupacabra.
Yeah, Chupacabra.
Chupacabra. Which, you know, every picture I've ever seen of like a supposed Chupacabra, it just looks like a dog with no hair.
Every time, I remember the Chupacabra story as it developed. I'm old enough to remember it.
Yeah.
As it developed in the media. The Chupacabra actually got better as it went along. Eventually, it became an alien-looking creature with spines on it. Yeah, but that's not what it originally was.
Well, the story only started, really, I think the earliest one was like 1995 or something like that. Yeah. It started in Puerto Rico, right?
And then it spread
to other places.
I did my teenage years in South America. When you know South American culture and Central American culture, there's a lot of Candomblé and a lot of Macumba and a lot of imagination. South Americans have fantastic imaginations. They love a good story and they like to make shit up. They just do.
Don't we all?
Yeah, we all like to make shit up. I don't believe that there was, of course there was no Chupacabra. No, it was just normal predation.
Yeah.
Normal predation and farmers and farm people like to tell a story of what it was because they didn't actually get a good look at it. Because predators are pretty quick, especially nocturnal predators. The chances of you actually catching one are probably pretty slim. You know, like you'd hear something going on in the chicken coop, and by the time you got outside with your flashlight, it's gone.
Yeah.
And then you find the wounded animals.
The thing about Chupacabra, it's like every time somebody says they've caught a Chupacabra or they filmed a Chupacabra or something, it always just looks like a dog. I'm like, what's the big deal?
Well, they had one that was like a dog wolf or a dog coyote hybrid.
But even so, that's a big deal. That's not, even if it was like a dog coyote hybrid, so what?
Well, there was never a Chupacabra.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
There was just the story.
I'm like, I want to see the full on thing with the spikes in its back and the, you know.
There was just the story of the Chupacabra.
That's what I mean. It's such a disappointment. I'm always like expecting more. But so actually, so like a better kind of were-creature story. Now, I kind of like this one. The Goat Man of Maryland. Now, okay. This is supposed, this is like more of a...
Did we do the break?
Yeah.
We did? Oh,
yeah, remember we did it before we started talking about the Nessie creatures.
Damn, oh man.
You're losing your mind.
Losing my mind.
That's okay, me too. It happens when you get old, kids. Something to look forward to.
What are you saying?
What's going on? Yeah. I don't know what's going on.
Where's that raccoon?
Where's that raccoon? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Where is that raccoon?
Right. Now that's going to be on every show now.
Yeah.
But yeah, was, there are no like were raccoons though, are there?
No.
Yeah, no. Half man, half raccoon? No. Okay, so we're going to have to settle for half man, half goat. Now this is a good story, Goat Man in Maryland. Now this is kind of more like a 50s sci-fi type of cryptid, right? Because apparently the Goat Man of Maryland used to be a person. He was a scientist, and much like Jeff Goldblum in The Fly, he was experimenting with goats. What he was doing with them, I don't know. But somehow, his DNA and the DNA of a goat became entangled, and he turned into a half-man, half-goat. Now, for some reason, after he turned into a half-man, half-goat, he got an axe and started running around terrorizing people and chopping on people's cars and things like that. Now, the weird thing about this story is that there's another one in Texas called the Lake Worth Monster, who's also a half-man, half-goat, and who also jumps out of trees and tears up cars. What do half-man, half-goats have against cars?
Well, no.
Let us know why.
First of all, the story is horse shit. That's not...
No kidding.
That's not an original story. That's the stories of satyrs. Satyr. That's all they're talking about. It was like Pan, you know? And the reason why it's attacking cars, because if it attacked a person, there'd be a victim left behind.
And then,
that would entail evidence. But if you attack a car, the story doesn't require any evidence.
Yeah, you can just chop up your own car and say the goat.
Somebody's car got chopped up. But if you said, well, this person got chopped up, and you said, well, where's the police report?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so that's why.
Okay, so other than
goats...
You
gotta call bullshit where it is.
Well,
all right?
Yeah.
What happened was that some kids saw some Roman statues and Roman depictions of Pan and satyrs and things like that, and they went, oh man, those must really be real. Let's make up a story.
Yeah. You know, there's also some reports of lizard men, reptilians, and considering like all the reptilian conspiracy theories, I'm surprised there's not more of these. But actually,
only one guy with the reptilicans, right? With the it's only
David
one.
Icke.
Yeah, there's only one guy.
But the cryptid ones are different because this one, I mean, the lizard man of Scape or Swamp, excuse me, that's from South Carolina, and this is supposedly a bipedal reptilian, much like a Sleestak, I guess. Okay. That's how I'm picturing him. About 7 feet tall, glowing red eyes. Now, he has dark hair over most of his body, too, so a hairy lizard? I don't know, whatever. Weird. That was actually first seen in 1988, and there was one also seen in Canada in 1972, and that's called the Thetis Lake Monster, and he supposedly looks like the Gill Man. You know, from Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Right.
You know, not as many lizard creatures as I would have thought. However, there is, in Ohio, there is a creature called the Loveland Frog. And as you might imagine, this is a 4 foot tall bipedal frog. And it looks, in every drawing I've ever seen, because obviously no one's taken photographs of this thing. Every picture I've seen of it has looked like just a big frog standing on two legs. It's not like a half man, half frog. It's just like a big frog standing on two legs. Okay, so this comes from 1955. And this man reported actually not just seeing one Loveland frog, seeing three frog people standing on the side of the road. This was in 1955. And a police officer said that he saw the Loveland frog in 1972. Now, the last sighting of it, and this kind of cracked me up, the most recent sighting of it was in 2016, and it was two teenagers who were playing Pokemon Go, and they saw the Loveland Frog. Now, the Loveland Frog is so famous in Ohio that apparently somebody wrote a musical called Hot Damn, It's the Loveland Frog. And I was like, oh my God, I so have to see that.
All right. What's the next one?
All right. So, we also had bird-like creatures. We got Mothman. Which, you know, that's kind of been covered. He just kind of looked like a big moth, a large flying man with 10-foot wings, basically. There's one in Cornwall, England called the Owl Man, which is kind of similar, big feathered guy. There's also one in the Congo and Western Zambia called the Kongamato, and that actually looks more like a pterosaur, which actually, that's not too
I don't know.
But I that's probably like a leftover from maybe our racial memory or something
I wouldn't believe any stories from Africa.
Yeah.
You know why? Because any cryptozoologist can go to Africa and those black guys over there can, are going to have fun with them. And say, oh, yeah, we've seen that. We'll take you right there where that is.
Well, that's what I would do.
Sure. They're gonna mess with that dude's head.
Let's mess with the white people.
Yeah, let's mess with the white people.
Now, there's also one, and I had never heard of this one, even though this is an American one, the Snallygaster. And that's supposed, this is from the D.C., Frederick County, Maryland area. Now, this one is kind of like, it's a big bird, but it's kind of like a dragon type of thing. Half reptile, half bird, with like a sort of metal beak with teeth in it. And occasionally tentacles. And usually in all the artwork I've seen, the tentacles were like coming out of its mouth. Or sometimes they're coming out of the bottom of it or whatever. And apparently it has a mortal enemy called the Dewayo or Dewayo. And that's kind of like a werewolf. And they fight all the time. I don't know why that is. So it's like this bird creature and this werewolf creature and they're fighting. So I don't know. I had actually never heard of that one before. So that was kind of a weird one. Also, one in the Congo. And this one is not really, like I said, this one's not really that crazy. It's called the Jibafofi, which is supposedly, it's just a big ass spider. It's supposed to be 4 to 6 feet across. Okay. Which, you know what? I've seen crabs that big.
Yeah, king crab.
I could buy that. I could buy
a terrestrial spider can't get that big. The chitin doesn't work well. It'd be too soft. It would just collapse. That was just, came from somebody's imagination or it was some kind of an old-timey misidentification of an Alaskan king
crab. Or some J.R.R. Like, Tolkien fan something like that. Coming
yeah.
up with it.
Yeah.
Now, this last couple minutes of the show, I kind of wanted to get into the more fun ones, like these kind of, these are like the what the fuck hybrid monsters.
Oh, these other ones weren't what the fuck?
Well,
you see these other ones weren't what the fuck?
They're less what the fuck.
Okay.
Because, okay, like, you know what I mean? A werewolf, you know, it doesn't exist, but it's not crazy. It's not that crazy.
No, it's crazy.
I mean, it's not crazy in that it's, you know, it's something that most people have come up with. It's, you know, it's half man, whatever.
All right.
These other ones, I don't know where the hell this shit's coming from. All right. The Jersey Devil, for example.
Yeah.
This.
That's a lot of old Milwaukee beer. And
yeah. And this was like New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
And this is described as a kangaroo-like creature. It has a goat's head, bat wings, horns, little arms with claws, cloven hooves, and a forked tail.
When did this story come from?
Now that's another thing.
Yeah, when does this story appear?
Same. Well, it was first reported in the 1700s. The most recent sighting I found was in 1993, a forest ranger said he saw it.
It's confirmed?
No, I'm reported. Just saying that's the first mention of
the
it.
The first mention of it was 1700s?
Was in the 1700s.
And it is being mentioned on 1700s parchment, or is this a book from the 1980s?
How would I know?
I need to know more information. Is this a book of the 1980s or the 1970s saying, oh, we found a book from the 1700s that has this monster in it?
Right.
Because that happens a lot in this business.
Well, yeah, I know.
You know, I would really be skeptical.
No, but I know that. Well,
I think the story's probably from the 1970s. Here's
the thing. The way you're approaching this as though I'm saying this shit exists. I'm not saying this shit exists.
No, I'm not
saying that they're real.
I know that.
I'm just saying.
I would like to see the source material. The source material of where that story came
from. Well, I'm sure you can.
I bet you that story's from the 70s. I bet you it is.
Well, probably.
And because, you know.
Jersey
knows how to troll.
Well, I should note that the highest incidence of Jersey Devil sightings was in 1960.
Was it? Okay.
Yes. That's when it was sighted.
It's probably when.
But I'm just wondering, like, what, like, hooves, bat wings, like a cow head or a goat head or what? What?
Yeah.
Is it like the devil? He's supposed to be the devil, right?
They were trolling.
But speaking of, like, horse creatures, honestly, the Philippines, they have the best monsters.
Yeah.
Japan's pretty good too, but Philippines have the best. They have the most what the fuck monsters.
Yeah.
Case in point, the Tikbalang, which is like a werehorse, but he's supposed to live, like, up in the mountains and stuff. And he's like a humanoid, but he's like tall and bony, and he's got really, really long arms and legs. But then he has a horse head and horse feet. Now, in some versions of the Tikbalang legend, he started out as an aborted fetus, but he was sent back to Earth from limbo in that form for some reason. Now, the Tikbalang, he has like spines sticking out of his neck. If you can get three of those spines out of his neck, then he'll, like, be your slave.
Okay.
Like, you can tell him to do stuff and he'll do it. Like, he'll be your servant.
Like a genie.
Like, yeah, he's like a genie. So he's not mean, necessarily. Right. Another weird one, and this is from Aboriginal mythology, is the Bunyip. Now, the weird thing about the Bunyip is that there's really no universally accepted description of what a Bunyip is. Like, the first description of it that I could find, like, in the literature and stuff like that, said it actually looked like a big, huge starfish, of all things.
Hmm.
But usually, like, the later drawings and stuff like that that said it was a Bunyip, it usually looks like it has, like, a dog face, like, a head, kind of like a crocodile, and it has, like, fur. Then it has a horsetail, flippers, tusks, and horns. Like, it's like a big, huge platypus, kind of, like, sort of, the way it's described. So I don't know what the hell is the deal with that one. That just sounds like a generalized monster. And there's also, South Africa has a good one called the Groot Slang. Now, the Groot Slang is like half snake, half elephant, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
So it's usually, I don't know, so there's like a legend about it where the gods were making creatures, and they were super high one day, you guys, and they made a Groot Slang, and then they were like, what the fuck is that? We can't have that. So they split it into an elephant and a snake, and they're like, all right, that's good. But one Groot Slang escaped. All
right.
So now all the Groot Slangs that are still in the world, like, are were sired from that one.
Okay.
But they're usually shown as, like, either an elephant with snakes on its face, or just, like, half snake, half elephant, that type of thing. And also, the cool thing about the Groot Slang, it's kind of like a dragon in that he's super into, like, gems and stuff.
Right.
So you can get him to not eat you by going, hey, I got all these diamonds, you can have these and don't eat me.
Okay.
Now, the last messed up one I want to talk about is also from the Philippines, and this was actually kind of my favorite one, or favorite ones, and that's the Aswang. And that's actually not so much one creature as, like, kind of a class of creatures. They're kind of like a vampire, werebeast, ghoul, witch, wizard type of thing, where it's like they kind of look like normal people most of the time, but then at night they can shapeshift and they drink blood. And the Philippines has like a bunch of stuff about, for some reason, like a lot of their monsters have really long tongues and they want to like stick their tongues in like pregnant women's bellies and like eat the fetuses out or like eat people's hearts and stuff. They're super into that kind of shit, man.
Yeah.
So, what's wrong with you, Philippines? That's fucked up. Well, but yeah. But the thing about the Aswangs, though, is that if you're friends with them, like, or neighbors with them, like, in their normal form, then they won't eat you. Right. It's almost like they only eat strangers or people they don't like. Now, also associated with the Aswang, and it may actually be a type of Aswang, is the Manananggal. And this was actually my favorite one of this whole show. I don't, you know, this one, obviously, this cannot exist. This is usually shown as a female, not always, but most of the time. And it's kind of like I guess it's like a harpy or a vampire type thing. The coolest thing about the Manananggal is that when she goes out to hunt, the top half of her body tears off of her bottom half.
Yeah.
And she sprouts these big wings, and then she goes flying around, like, sucking blood and eating babies and whatnot.
Right. It's a vampire.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But why does she leave her bottom half behind? Because...
To make it more better. Yeah.
Because here's the thing, though. When she leaves her bottom half behind, that part is, like, super vulnerable. And if you come across the bottom half of a Manananggal and you fuck it all up, like you put garlic or holy water, I don't know, or something on it, then she dies because she can't get back onto her legs.
Can't get back onto it. Right, yeah.
Yeah. So... Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know what the point of that is. Just because it's neat that they like the idea of, like, some crazy woman flying around with her intestines hanging
out. It's just a story that they made up.
I guess so. But that was actually my favorite one. That's why I saved it till last.
The last one. Okay, because there were also some cryptids on there that looked extremely plausible, but they were like normal. It was like, yeah, we saw a woodchuck. It's about the size of a woodchuck, a little bit bigger, and it's got stripes on it. Just that kind
of
stuff.
Well, see, there's a lot of those that, like, I kind of left a lot of those out because, like I said, if those exist, everybody'd be like, big whoop.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, it's a different kind of wolf. Oh, it's a different species of bear. Big deal. Right. It's got stripes on it, and this one doesn't. Woohoo.
There is also some stuff that's believed to be extinct, but... Now and then they claim to have seen them, like the Tasmanian wolf.
Right. Things like that. Things like Tasmanian tiger.
The Tasmanian tiger.
Yeah. Or, things like that, which, like I said, you know, I would be a little bit surprised if that existed, but not super. So I don't really consider that.
It all gets back down to that breeding population.
Yeah.
You have to have a big enough breeding population to maintain a species.
Yeah.
And true. That always makes an environmental impact.
It does, yeah.
Always. So.
All right. So, as I feared, we ran out because I left out a lot of stuff that I had in my outline.
Yeah, this is, you just, don't a even know this is just a primer show.
We just picked out ones that I thought were cool.
Yeah.
I thought were cool.
It's just a primer show because this is a big subject.
It is, yeah. I spent so much time preparing.
And to focus in just on one of them, you need a lot of information that we don't have access to.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But, okay, so that'll do it for this week's episode. Hope you enjoyed this very information-dense exploration. As always, if you like our show, please subscribe to our YouTube channel or check out Project Entertainment Network.
Like on Facebook.
Like on Facebook, follow on Twitter, all of that good stuff.
Check out the t-shirts.
Yeah, I keep forgetting to mention, go to Zazzle.com/13o'clock. We have five different designs. And there's also one on the Project Entertainment Network store. It's a slightly different one with the logo design on it. And you can check that one out too. And,
you to make me a Snake Plissken t-shirt.
Okay, I'll make you a Snake Plissken t-shirt. Okay. I'll get around to it one of these days. Also, like I said, England, Australia listeners, if you want free audiobook copies of any of my four paranormal books, then drop me a message and I will send you a code. I still have a few codes left if you promise you're going to review it.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole point of me giving them out.
Yeah, and if you've already done a review, it's okay. You can contact us again. We'll give you another book that you haven't read yet.
Yeah.
Or you haven't listened to yet.
Yeah.
They're all audiobooks.
Yeah, just let me know which one I gave you, and then I'll give you one of the other ones if you liked it, and you can review another one, too, if you're into that. Yeah. And that'll do it for episode 42.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Believe, believe, yes you can. Believe in the power of the Mothman. Believe, believe, yes you can. Believe in the power of the Mothman.
Well, he's 7 feet tall with eyes of red, and if you don't listen to him, you will end up dead. He tried to warn everybody, yes he did, about how they were in danger from a broken bridge.
Believe.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.